2 years ago, the strongest earthquake ever to strike Japan triggered a massive tsunami. The 9.0 magnitude quake killed nearly 19,000 people and left some 300,000 homeless. The event also damaged the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant, causing the world's worst radiation leak since the Chernobyl accident back in 1986. Now, on Monday, Michigan State University will commemorate the second anniversary of the Great East Japan Earthquake with an event at the campus's International Center. One of the speakers will be Dr. Ethan Siegel, a professor of history here at MSU and an expert on Japan. And Dr. Siegel joins me now in the studio. Nice to have you in here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
How has the recovery process come along here in these 2 years? What's working? What isn't working?
Yeah, it's unfortunately a somewhat mixed situation. It's been slow, and particularly for people in the region. I've had the chance to visit affected communities on four different research trips since March of 2011. And there are some very hopeful signs. Many of the port facilities have been reconstructed. And there's a lot of government aid that is going into the region. But there are also a number of significant issues that linger. As you mentioned, about 300,000 people still who cannot return to their homes, problems with unemployment, and of course, in the area around Fukushima, the issue of radiation and contamination is so severe that some communities may never be able to return home.
What about housing?
Housing also is a very serious concern. Most of the people who lost their homes are still living in temporarily erected housing communities. Those were initially supposed to have been in place for 2 years, but it appears they'll have to continue because of problems with rebuilding. It's unclear whether communities can rebuild in their former coastal locations because although some people say this tsunami was a once-in-a-thousand-year event, if it happened again tomorrow, there's no way to prevent it. So whether they can rebuild in those communities, whether higher seawalls will be necessary or even feasible, these kinds of issues still, unfortunately, have not yet been resolved.
What do we know about the after effects of the radiation leak from the nuclear power plant?
Well, it's interesting. There just was a study released earlier this year that suggests, although some smaller, higher, or some slightly raised incidence of thyroid cancer and other kinds of cancers have been detected, the numbers are not as high as they had perhaps anticipated, which I suppose is encouraging, although I think that the data is still very much out on this issue. The studies will have to continue. One study is anticipating 30 years of research following the victims of Fukushima. And another of our colleagues here on campus, Dr. James Trusco, has actually been following this issue very carefully in the College of Human Medicine.
Now, does this interplay with clean water issues? Is clean water being addressed? Is it available?
As far as drinking water goes to the temporary housing communities, as far as I'm aware, that has not been a problem. There has been a very serious problem, however, with the ocean water. Because of water leaked from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, the reason all these nuclear power plants are built along the ocean is they need water for cooling. And the way they had to try to deal with the emergency at Fukushima was by flooding the plant. And some of that water then gets released into the ocean. And it's almost impossible to trace once it's mixed in with the ocean water. So what this means for the fishing industry and many other seaside industries remains unclear.
So how are they contending with that? Do they have a plan for addressing that?
Well, there are a number of plans that are being discussed and debated, but I'm not sure anything that I think is really going to alleviate the situation. There was a study, just released that TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric Power Company that runs the Fukushima plant, is planning to dilute some of this water that it is storing for cooling purposes and then release it into the ocean because it's running out of storage capacity. And many of us, me included, are quite unsure that that's really going to be adequate.
What's happening with regard to the country's approach to nuclear power in general after this?
Yeah, that also, unfortunately, is not entirely clear. The previous two prime ministers, Kan and Noda, who were part of the Democratic Party of Japan, which was in power at the time, expressed interest in moving Japan away from nuclear power. But the most recent elections, which put Prime Minister Abe, the current prime minister in power, from a different political party, he has backed away from that position and believes Japan should continue on moving ahead with nuclear power. There are many in the public who are opposed to this. Earlier On March 11th, there were over 300 rallies held around the country to express public opposition to this policy. The issue, though, is that Japan is very poor in natural resources, meaning fossil fuels. So back even in the 1950s, the nuclear power industry was very successful in convincing politicians and the public that Japan needed nuclear power. And those issues of a lack of natural resources remain. So although there are many who would like to see Japan move to more renewable resources, wind, solar, and the like, developing that infrastructure would take a lot of time. What they've done in the short term has been to import fossil fuels, which is very expensive, and of course does nothing to help problems with greenhouse gases and the like. So the situation, again, is not entirely clear.
Japan has such a long and curious history with nuclear power, which you just alluded to. There was, of course, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but later the Japanese government, as you say, went all in on nuclear power as an energy source, and it's even become prominently featured in Japanese popular culture to an extent, in anime and manga. Tell us about that.
Well, indeed, as you suggest, the government early on drew very careful distinctions between nuclear weapons, such as that had been used against Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and nuclear power. And they convinced successfully the majority of the public that nuclear power was safe. One of the great post-war animated heroes of, say, the 1950s and 1960s was the character Tetsuan Atomu, who we know in English as Astro Boy, the same character, drawn by the great manga artist Osamu Tezuka. And he was a robot boy. The story is somewhat Pinocchio-like, perhaps, but unlike Pinocchio, he is powered by a nuclear heart, a nuclear active, you know, energy heart. And he was a great hero, a great friend to humanity, and one way that people could see nuclear power as a safe and friendly resource. This continues with many more, you know, recent anime and manga images, and I'm told that even school children in some schools are shown animated videos to help convince them that nuclear power is safe. The perhaps more important issue, though, is where many of these power plants are built. These are in communities, oceanside communities, that have few other economic alternatives. If fishing is not successful, then there aren't many resources for these towns. And so they agree to allow power plants to be built because of all the money that the industry brings to their town, both jobs and investments. And so they've taken big risks that I imagine some of those communities now regret.
We've been listening to Dr. Ethan Siegel, professor of history at Michigan State and an expert on Japan.